Good afternoon and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on November 2nd, 2021, and time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding meetings remotely. Joining me today is Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Commissioner Tony Olson, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, our General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Lila Wall, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. We will ask for questions or comments on agenda items as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting, while others may require more time. Please indicate you'd like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if joining by phone, dial *9, and attendees will be called on to speak at the appropriate time. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
I have none. Mr. President, we will be adding on as items 6C and 6D, consideration of a motion for indemnity and defense of an employee.
Thank you. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Comments from the public is item 3 on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first up, we have item 2, recognition. All right, we have our employee of the month for November, Alan here. And we have Paul Kiss here to introduce Alan today.
Perfect. Thank you, Commissioner Logan. Alan, you want to turn your video on there? There he is. Perfect. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. We've got John Rover also with me. John was one of the nominees. We're up here doing interviews today. So we'll just jump in here real quick. Absolutely honored when Tracy reached out, let us know that Alan had been nominated by the committee. It was just, it was a welcoming, a breath of fresh air, right? It's just been involved at Operations Center there. Through the safety meeting, he was obviously in the safety position before, worked with Alan a ton, and then coming into the operations center and just seeing Alan's level of dedication to safety and his commitment to the work in the field as a lineman and all the high risks that we've dealt with. It's first saw it, he started working when the COVID hit. He's been the safety chair for a long time. The COVID hit, and it was just how do we navigate through these waters and still keep everyone safe and still bring that level of safety to the crew. So he was doing multiple safety meetings every single month. He would have 4 or 5, 6 different safety meetings just so we could social distance. But we felt it was very relevant that we had to have our safety meetings. And Alan just, you know, took it to that next level, took the time, spent all day doing it. We'd spend 6 or 7 hours having presentations. The last couple months, we've been able to get all of us together. And a big highlight that we've seen with Alan is they'll sit down with him a few days ahead of time and throw a presentation out to him thinking, honestly, oh, this is pretty good. Alan's going to present on it. He'll take it for the next hour or two. He'll take and gut the whole thing and come up with this beautiful presentation that just engages a group, right? It's always a tough group. You have all kinds of different dynamics in there. And the way Alan shares and presents it, it keeps the liveliness to the group. But then all the real life examples that he brings forward just engages it, brings those the near misses, the close calls, the accidents and he's been a part of, makes it relevant to the circumstances we're having at work. And it just, the engagement that he brings to the district is huge. Guarantee without a shadow of a doubt, Alan has made a difference. I guarantee he saved a life by his attributes and his passion and his care for his trade. Every Monday we meet out on the dock there. It's constant. He's bringing up something. He's bringing some positivity. He's bringing some near misses, making a district, a huge difference here at the district. John, do you want to jump on there?
Sure. Yeah, I just would like to add, it's great to see Alan receive this recognition. You know, I'll never forget one of my conversations with Alan a couple of years back, and he talked about his passion and the importance of furthering the trade. And it's really cool to see Alan, his actions every day and living that out. He does that through being the safety chair, making the safety relatable, engaging the group that he's, you know, leading that meeting with, and really breaking it down. He's been very involved with the apprenticeship, teaching our apprentices for the last couple of years. And like Paul said, every day on the crew, it's cool to see, because, you know, Alan brings tremendous experience before he even started the district. And he's come here and he shared that with, you know, many of our crew and apprentices. And he just loves teaching. You know, if you're around that guy, you're going to learn real quick. Like, he loves to be a team player and to teach. And it's cool. It's really cool. So thank you, Alan.
Well, thank you so much, Alan. Congratulations. You know, reading the write-up on you and Paul mentioned this, I was thinking, you know, you're training new apprentices. You never know whose life you're going to save in the future, providing such a great education. And it sounds like you make it fun and you make it interesting and you find a way to reach everybody. And so that's so important when you're training. So thank you so much for what you do.
Maybe Alan could unmute and say hello. Welcome to our meeting, Alan. We are so proud of you. And it's just awesome what you do. I just really hand it to you. Thank you.
Yeah, good afternoon. Can everyone hear me well?
So yeah. Yep. Yep.
Wonderful. Thank you. Wow, after an introduction like that, I'd like to meet this guy. Yeah. Sounds like a great guy. wonderful. Very flattered and very appreciative to be recognized. Yeah. And like Paul and John both said, I did have a little bit of experience. I feel like a new hire here at the district. I hired on 4 years ago, but I came from the outside as a contract lineman. And so, you know, I like brought a lot of that experience with me. I've always been very passionate about safety as it relates to productivity and health and just harmony amongst, you know, my crew members, you know. Relying heavily on some of my hair-raising experiences I had as an independent contract lineman, bringing that into work. And what really makes it work for me here and keeps me motivated is the amount of support that I get here from the district, my supervisors, whether, you know, conversations I have with John Harlow or John Rover or Paul Kiss, it's just 100% support and making the right decision, making the safe decision. And you know, it's even one of our foundations of the safety manual. It's something I believe in. It's, you know, no task that we are going to perform is worth risking someone's life. And this is an awesome place to work because they believe it here. Everyone here believes it. It's not just a statement that we, you know, put on a book and hand out to new hires. So with their support, I've been able to kind of stay motivated and stay above the, you know, stay happy about this and take my happiness and safety and bring it to the people. So thank you very much. I'm really grateful for this award.
This is Commissioner Olson, Alan. I got to get my 2 cents worth in. Well deserved. Your work in safety, you know, that's core to one of the core value for one of the utilities. So important, but you know, and it's been quoted several times here, but I picked up, you know, you said you wanted to leave the profession better than you found it. Mm-hmm. And then I look up and I say, he's a apprenticeship trainer, and got to get on my soapbox about the work that you folks do in apprenticeships, because people have heard this story before, but you know, when I came on the board in 1902, the management at that time was doing a pathetic job of trying to run apprenticeship programs. It was bad. Mm-hmm. So when I came on board, I had three things that I wanted to do. One of them was to take that to something that was what it is today, and I hope will grow into the future. So, you know, you say you want to make a difference. Your work there will make a difference. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Olson. Yes, absolutely. I love being involved with the apprentices out here in the field as well as in the classroom.
Yeah. So first, Commissioner Olson, did you say you've been on the board since 1902?
Oh, sure. I'm gonna laugh about it now.
I am super proud of you. Everything that has been said is absolutely the case. You truly have made a difference, are making a huge difference, certainly from a health and safety perspective, but your overall attitude, your demeanor, it makes a difference on morale for everybody that you're around. And to me, that's as much a part of safety, people being in good spirits, being able to stay cut in, and you do a phenomenal job of that. So again, just super proud of you and so glad you are a part of this team, a huge part of this team. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else want to say anything?
I just want to say we have a lot of great safety chairs across the organization, and Alan's setting a tremendous example for that. And that peer-to-peer safety learning is what takes our culture to a whole nother level. It's one thing for me or John or Paul to get up in front of the room and talk about safety, but when they're hearing it from their coworkers, it really, really hits home. It's relevant. And just agree with everything everyone's saying, Alan. Thank you. You're doing a great job. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks, Guy.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Alan. Do you have anything else you want to say to us?
No, I just wanted to say thank you very much. I'm very flattered, very honored to be recognized. I know you had a lot of competition for this award every month. I know there's a lot of really, really, you know, shining people here at the district. So it's one of the things that makes me love working here. So thank you.
So Alan, if we were in person today, normally we would do some photos. So you'll have to do like a screenshot on your device. And of course, if we were all together taking pictures, it'd be a super spreader event. So anyway, so everybody that is willing to would turn on their cameras. Let's wave or just do a big round of applause.
Thank you.
Anybody
thank
can
Alan for his work. Thank you,
thank
Alan.
You very much. Thank you. All right.
All right. Next, we have item 3, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not listed on today's agenda? If so, please raise your hand. We have one. We have Gayla Shoemake. Good afternoon, Gayla.
Good afternoon, Sid. Good afternoon, commissioners. First of all, I want to thank you for having an employee of the month. I think that's a wonderful process to have, and I think it helps people be recognized who might not otherwise be recognized. So I'm so glad you do that. I have two comments today. The first one is regarding the IRP, which you talked about last week, and I think I'm going to be sounding like a broken record, but I'd be more confident if there were some more emphasis on production, green, clean production of solar and wind in that plan. So much rests on conservation, which depends primarily on customers reducing their usage. Now, we don't have a fallback position. What if the customers don't reduce? What if conservation doesn't work? It just seems to me that we'd be stuck with limiting the number of days we have electricity. It seems to me that a fallback position would be solar farms and wind farms. And so I'm still going to suggest that you consider that, because I do believe it would be a fail-safe to the current plan. That's the first comment. The second comment had to do with, and I know that was in today's agenda, Sid, but it had to do with the CEIP was talked about, Ian talked about earlier today. And I'm concerned, somebody mentioned it too, but concerned about the people who don't have computers, who can't give feedback, and wondering, particularly for those who are underserved or low income, who don't have computers, could you do some actual telephoning to ask people? I know there are two people on one of my Zoom groups that do not have a computer. but they have access via telephone, and they participate. They do participate. So I guess I would just suggest that you consider telephoning some of those groups that are hard to reach, rather than assuming that their responses are going to be the same of the ones who actually do respond. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I see no other hands up. So we'll move on to item 4, our consent agenda. First is 4A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of October 19th, 2021, and the special meeting of October 26th, 2021. B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments, and C, consideration of certification / ratification of approval and approval of district checks and vouchers. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? If there is, please raise your hand. I'm seeing no hands raised from the public. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
I have none. Commissioner Olson, I just have a question. Declaration of emergency for last week's hiccup, but it is linked to the one that's already in place that is for economic conditions and shortages in equipment material. Is it okay to link this to that? Because this is storm related. Is that okay?
Commissioner, this is Clark Langstrat, Contracts and Purchasing. We do have two declarations on the agenda today.
Thank you. I missed that one.
Okay.
Okay, I see it now. I apologize. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
No, thank you.
Then I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 5, public hearing 5A. Continue our public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget. I will now convene a public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget, and we have Sarah Bond, who will facilitate this conversation.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here to share the results of the hard work that has been done this year. So I'm going to go ahead and just jump right in. Control of the slides here. There we go. So our agenda today, we're going to be talking about the entire budget in today's meeting. In the previous meetings, we've split it into two. So today, the first part will be about our electric and generation systems. And then we're going to also talk about our water system in today's meeting. So the first slide I wanted to show you, this is a comparison of the 22 budget to the 21 budget. We'll be going through most of these items in detail. I just wanted to point out a few things. You'll notice we're both our operating revenues and our operating expenditures are up from 2021. And you'll also notice our capital expenditures are up quite a bit from 2021. So we do have a few changes that we'll be going through in the budget between the 2 years. Also wanted to point out that we're also going to be using some bond proceeds, which I'll discuss. So you can see that here at the bottom. So I'll be going through more of this as I go through the presentation. So we want to start off just talking a little bit about our customers and our loads and our revenues.
This is Commissioner Olson.
Yes.
Can you go back to the other slide?
Absolutely.
You said that there are changes from the October 1 budget.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. They're from the 21 budget. So the proposed budget.
From the October, whatever it was.
Two or three. The same numbers as October. Okay. I apologize if I misspoke.
All right. A question I had, and maybe I'm just missing something. On the, total operating reserves, in the first meeting in October, it looked like it was 670 and now it's 707. Is there any
operating revenues, you mean?
Are you talking about other operating revenues?
Well, if I went back to our presentation, the first meeting in October, and everything else was fine straight across, but for some reason, I thought I saw in that October presentation, total operating revenues were 670, and now they're 707.
I apologize for the confusion. If I recall right, there was actually a mistake on the slide that had the summaries in the October presentation. So
okay.
The number that should have been there is the 707.
So all right. Thank
this,
you.
And if you go to the budget book, this is also the schedule that was in the budget book. So I believe last time I unfortunately had a mistake.
I should have done that. I just looked at the PowerPoint. Thank you.
Of course.
They're calling you Eagle Eye Olson.
Yeah.
So this slide, I try to be pretty low key on the budget. I don't want to be a big pain in the
gazoo. I think to give Sarah a little credit, I think she actually caught it mid presentation because I think while she was presenting, there was some communication behind the scenes about
okay.
We've actually got it. So
well, that sorry went right over my head. Okay, thanks.
Apologize for that. So this is a slide we put together that I think is kind of fun. We had a lot of fun finding the logos of each city of, you know, some of the major cities in our county. So obviously, you know, the Snohomish County population is about 840,000, and how our customers are made up. So our biggest part of our portfolio are residential customers. They're about 57% of our load. We're almost to 334,000 residential customers. Our commercial customers, we've got about approximately 34,000 customers, and they make up about 35% of our load. Our industrial customers, we have about 77 currently. They make up about 7% of our load. And then a little bit of our load is made up of our streetlight program. I also included in here who our largest customers are. These aren't necessarily in a particular order. And these 10 largest customers, in terms of revenues, they actually account for about 10% of our total energy sales revenue. So I thought that was just kind of interesting information.
It was, yeah, I hadn't seen that before, yeah.
This slide here looks at our loads. So this is the amount of power we expect to sell to our customers. And we want to show a little bit of history and then also what our forecast is looking like. And so, you know, you can tell the trend. We're down from where we used to be historically. We've been trending down over the last few years. We're kind of down here at this lower level here, though we are expecting a little bit of an upward tick in our forecast. A lot of that is coming from our residential loads. We are seeing increasing loads in the county because people are moving here because of working from home, and there's a lot of new development. Anybody who's out in the county is seeing that now. We're expecting new customer connections to be a little bit even higher than 2021. Offsetting that a little bit is some loss in our commercial customers. They've been the hardest hit. There is still some growth factored in, though it's not as large as we expect in the residential area. In the industrial forecast, you know, there are some assumptions in there for Boeing production. We are expecting it to ramp up by 2024, but we're not seeing that yet in the 2022 budget. Part of our part of the budget for 2022 includes an expectation of about $6 million of participation in our income qualified discount program. That's a lot to say there. So we are continuing to expect to offer that service to our customers who are eligible.
This Commissioner Olson again. It's proposed to be down next year.
Yeah, if you look at 2020, we're assuming to be somewhat similar to where we actually resulted in 2020. Budget is the budget number. You know, we didn't really quite know when we were putting the budget together what was going to be happening with the current economic environment. So the budget was a little bit higher, but the current number is based on, I think, more updated expectations.
Okay, thank you.
We talked about this a little bit at our October meeting. The 22 budget does include a 2.1% general rate increase. And this is the first in a series of some small incremental rate increases that we'll be talking a little bit more about at the November 16th meeting. We have not had a rate increase in 4 years, a general rate increase. And you know, we've done everything we can to minimize this. Originally, we were considering a 2.5. We were able to bring it down to a 2.1 by doing some cost management. We also include a slide here that just kind of shows if we compared our rates to the general CPI with our BPA and our general rate adjustment, we've still stayed below inflation. So we're definitely doing everything we can to keep these rate increases even below the level of inflation.
Sarah, is that 2.1, is that the spring one or the fall one?
This would be April 22.
Okay.
Sarah, if we subtracted out the residential exchange credit, if any idea what this graph would look like, would it be perceptible? Or
Brian Booth might have a better thought on that. However, I can't imagine it would be super impactful. I don't think it's enough to drive a huge change in this graph. He may have a better idea on that, but I could definitely do the math and take a look and provide that information to you. But at this point, I don't think it would be.
Brian's got his hand up.
Yeah.
Hi, commissioners. Yeah, I can confirm there would not be a perceptible difference here. The residential exchange credit moves up and down a little bit every couple of years, but not enough to be meaningful here.
Thank you.
Thank you for confirming that. So that is the information on our retail revenues. We also receive revenues from the sale of excess energy in the market. You can see we're expecting a little bit of an uptick from the 2021 budget. We're expecting about $45 million next year, and that's mostly based on we're expecting a little bit higher market prices. Of course, this is, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the market. This can vary, but this is what we're planning. We do, as a reminder, budget at what's called P35, which is an assumption for the amount of excess power we might have available to sell. Things go a little bit better, the number could be a little higher. So we just wanted to make sure we showed a little bit what the expected is, but we've always budgeted at this P35 level, which is a slight bit more conservative number. And lastly, our other operating revenues. So we have, obviously you can tell this by looking at the graph, there's quite a few other operating revenues that we plan for and budget for. Point out just a few things. Our excess transmission capacity sales, those have been really strong over the last few years, and we're expecting those to continue to remain strong. And that's largely a result of our power schedulers doing a great job of marketing that power. I also want to point out the residential exchange credit. You'll notice this is a little bit bigger. So this is the amount that we'll be able to pass through to our residential customers this year. It's been larger than we've received in the past. So that's really great news for our customers. So those are we've covered on the operating revenues. Are there any questions before I move on to our operating expenditures? Okay.
I think we're good to go. Thank you.
All right.
Well, I'm still looking.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So operating expenditures, we'll start by talking a little bit about our BPA because that's one of the largest line items in our budget. If we look at our BPA costs, especially if you compare from 2020, which was the start of the last rate period, to 22, we're actually down a little bit. So we've gone down just a slight bit, and that's due to a small increase in block megawatt hours. We also have a small decrease in slice megawatt hours. It's about flat if you round it out to the millions. So we're expecting relatively flat BPA costs. Our slice true-up, we have received a credit the last few years. We tend to budget it at neutral because we really don't know what it's going to be. So we leave it at zero. And then when we forecast throughout the year, we'll true it up if we get no better information from BPA. And lastly, we're not expecting to have to spend any dollars on the financial reserves policy funding. And that was a result of the most recent rate case settlement.
Okay.
So overall, our BPA costs are relatively flat compared to 2021. The next part of our power portfolio is our renewable power contracts. And you can tell by the colors on here that wind is definitely the largest portion of it. And really, there's very little change between year over year with our contracts. We really, with wind, it really is going to vary how much the wind blows. We pay for the share regardless of the production. So the budget is very similar to what we expected in 2021. You can see there are years where sometimes the wind doesn't blow as much, so our costs aren't quite as high. But for the most part, they've remained very stable over the last few years. So the next portion is our own generation system. So this is the amount of, this is the electric source system purchases power from our own projects. And that's going to vary every year. And this really, the prices really depend on how much the projects spend on debt service, capital, O&M, et cetera. Compared to 21, we're very, very similar. In fact, a slightly lower budget than 2021. And we'll talk a little bit about those projects, but you can see the different projects that we have. We're at about the $27 million a year for our combined generation system projects. I highlighted this in October. We just wanted to show you a little bit more about part of the budget for generation system. This is the O&M budget compared to the O&M taxes and depreciation. They're just slightly higher than it was in 2021. And we're just highlighting one of the largest O&M projects in Jackson, which is the shutdown. This has been deferred since 2021. I talked about this in October, so I won't spend a whole lot of time on it, but this is the largest project that is in Jackson right now. They're going to shut down the powerhouse for 2 weeks to do some maintenance work. And the capital budget is actually lower than it was in 2021. And I already covered some of these in October, but we thought we'd just refresh a few of the larger projects that we're doing in the generation system this year. There's many small projects. These are three of the larger ones. They're doing some replacements in the Jackson Comeback Dam. We've got the continuing project of the renewable generation Qualco biogas generator system, and then also Woods Creek is putting in a renewable energy learning center. So these are just a few of the projects that the generation system is doing in 2022. Last but not least of our power portfolio are our market purchases. You can see we're actually, even though our revenues are expected to be higher in our sales, but we're also expecting our purchases to go up as well. Again, also as a reflection of expected higher prices. So we're seeing it on both sides of our market purchases. Yeah. And as you can see, and as we all remember from 2019, you know, this is an area where we probably have a little bit the most risk of extreme weather events or other economic conditions impacting us. 2019 was obviously an example of one of those years. So our focus in our portfolio is to reduce the amount of market purchases that we have to make in order to reduce that risk. I'm going to move on to our operations and maintenance. Our budget this year is $246 million, which is very similar to our 2021 budget. I really like this graph because it kind of just shows the relative percentage of where the dollars are spent. So the majority of our O&M departmental budget is distribution and engineering, and that's where the maintenance of all of our facilities are, our substations, I should say, our non-building facilities is in our D&E area. Transmission and ancillary services, even though we kind of maybe think of it as being power related, it's truly an operating maintenance cost. So that's about 24% of our O&M budget. And you can just see by the rest of the graph, the customer and energy services are next largest focus. and then our information technology, and then all of our other littler departments. So just to look at how our O&M kind of breaks up across the district. So looking a little bit deeper, we're highlighting a few of our customer-focused O&M projects. So one of the largest is our vegetation management or tree trimming program. It includes funding to maintain on over 600 miles of distribution and transmission lines at a cost of about $9 million in 2022. We also provide funding to ensure that we can respond quickly to major and minor storms. As you know, this definitely has happened, it's been happening recently. So the budget in 2022 is about $10.7 million. And we also have a little bit more of funding in our capital budget as well for emergency and storm restoration.
This is Commissioner Olson. I thought we typically didn't budget for capital for major storms.
We've been trying to have the budget reflect more what we've been seeing in actuality. It's happening, we're spending the dollars. So we just want to make sure we're planning for it appropriately and making sure we're covering our bases, having those dollars.
So this is a different thought, huh?
It is a little bit of a different philosophy, yeah. I see.
Well, I think Commissioner Olson's question though, I mean, to be clear, we have budgeted for storms, I think. So we've got budget money for operations and capital both for storm work for this year. But what Sarah is talking about is we did take a pretty hard look at the history there and felt like it was under. And so we felt like we needed to bump it up a little bit to just reflect some reality.
All right. It's just that the reason I asked was, you know, if you're what previously, what I had seen was they plunked $10 million in and never use it, you know, so, but what I'm hearing is you actually have gone back and looked year to year, and this is about what you think we'll spend.
Yeah, we essentially what we did, and it looked like John was leaning in there too, if he wants to jump in, but essentially what we did this year is we kind of established an internal policy, just an approach that we would look back at the last, say 3 to 5 years and see what that trend line is and budget about 75% of that, knowing that it fluctuates kind of up and down. We felt like going all the way to the high water mark of those years would probably be a little too much, but we had been a little low. And the other trick is figuring exactly where to put it, you know, because we have storms in the winter and storms in the fall. And so if you front load it all, you've got budget variances to deal with all the year. And if you back load it, you've got variances in the other direction. So what we're trying to do is get it more realistic and also put it in both places just so we can see if we can capture it better.
Yeah, we'll have to fiddle with it. Okay, thank you.
John, did I step on you there? Sorry.
Nope, that's spot on. You know, I've worked at different places that have had different philosophies on, you know, don't budget much for storms and just keep your fingers crossed, and then explain the variances, and some that put a lot or the high end, as Scott explained, and then you don't use it. We're trying to take kind of a hybrid approach and really look at, as Scott indicated, the last 3 to 5 years and see what the trends are, and just try to dial it in as close as we can, knowing, as Scott's, in Scott's infamous words, as soon as we budget, it's wrong.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you both. Good question. And the last is part of our customer, we employ customer service representatives to provide excellent service to our customers. Our budget for that area is about $13.9 million in 22. And one part of our operating maintenance budget is our energy efficiency program. So we'd like to spend a slide to talk a little bit about that. We've kind of given you a little bit of a pie chart that shows where the dollars are being spent program-wise. the budget for 22 is about $14.2 million. And those are the direct incentives to the customers. And as a reminder, we've talked about this before, approximately $7 million of that will be reimbursed from BPA. And that's part of the other operating revenues that we looked at a little bit earlier today. The last piece of our O&M I'm going to talk about today is our transmission ancillary services. We are expecting a 2% increase October 1st. So it's already taken place. So that'll be in our 2022 budget. So we provide, BPA provides us two products. We've got our point-to-point transmission and then also some of the ancillary services that we purchase to support grid reliability associated with our load and resources. So you can see our costs have been relatively steady over the last few years. There isn't any really significant change between 21 and 22. Are there any questions on the operating expenditures before I move on to capital?
Questions, commissioners?
So capital, we have many programs. So we've kind of highlighted some of the major projects in them. One of the largest is our expansion program. So this is where we actually create new substations in order to meet reliability. We've got three major projects in 22, the Sky Valley switching station, $11 million of that in 2022, which is going to be bond funded. We're also going to be working on the Stanwood to Camino line. In 2022, the cost will be $4.1 million. And then also the Twin City substation of $1.8 million. So those are three of the large projects that are happening in 2022 in our expansion program. So our asset management program, this is the program where we maintain our large maintenance on our current assets. The largest piece of it is our wood pole replacement and treatment program. That's funded at $7 million in 2022. Our cable replacement program is $5.5 million in 2022. And then you can see we've got several other miscellaneous type of projects that we are part of this ongoing program to basically keep our system running. Transportation and equipment. The budget request is $9.9 million in 2022. And so this is to replace our existing vehicles, maintain our existing vehicles. And we've got about planned fleet replacements. So ones that we've known, about $5.9 million. Those are replacements. There are some additions that will be added. That's budgeted at $2.1 million. And then there's some dollars that are aside for unplanned fleet purchases for things that come up in, during the year. So we're targeting about $9.9 million this year.
This is Commissioner Olson. Does that include connect up? Or are you not beginning to purchase those until 2023?
The vans, you mean?
Yeah, excuse me.
I'm pretty confident that those are budgeted in the Connect Up budget, but I will verify that to be 100% sure. But I'm pretty confident.
They won't appear here then. They'll be separate in another.
But they're in the Connect Up capital budget, but I will confirm that for you.
Okay.
I think we voted on approving the purchase last time at the last meeting. But that's a little different from having it in the budget.
So could you check on that, Sarah? Just
absolutely, if I have a note
in terms of clarifying.
I guess definitely follow up with you on that one.
Okay.
We also have our customer, we call it our customer service program, and also known as kind of our new connection. So our costs of getting new customers connected to our system. This is primarily reimbursable work. This includes our plat work, our line extensions, our street and area lighting, And then we also have a special project, our Sound Transit Linwood extension. So like I said, this is largely our reimbursable work, and this is up a little bit from 2021. We also have a newer program this year. It's our partially reimbursable program. So this is also customer requested work. It's for very large customers where the demand is over 2.5 megawatt hours, and it falls under our new load policy. So we do have some dollars budgeted in here. We've got some projects under the Edgecombe Second Bank, and then also this Darrington Wood Innovation Center. And part of these dollars are budgeted as reimbursements to the district.
Is there any idea what Second Bank is?
I unfortunately do not know the answer to that. There might be somebody on the call who does.
That means the second transformer, the second bank.
Okay.
Bank refers to the additional transformer.
At a substation? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yes, at Edgecombe Substation.
Okay. That makes sense. Thanks.
So we're having to add it because of North Point, et cetera, et cetera. And then they reimburse us for some percent of that.
That's baked into that new load policy, correct?
Yeah, okay.
You've been briefed about the Connect Up project, but so when we look at it, our entire budget, we have included some funding in the budget for Connect Up. And as you know, we're going to be starting the design, initial build out of the communications network and IT solution in 2022. We also have a little bit of O&M. We have a little bit of money, about $1.9 million for the meter data management system, also built into the 2022 budget.
But that's what I was getting back with transportation. This is the project. But are those monies then distributed throughout the budget in terms of fleet, labor, or consulting services, et cetera, et cetera?
Commissioner Olson, this is Guy Payne, AGM of D&E Services. I believe the $1.2 million for the vans, for the meter exchanges, for Connect Up, have been moved into the transportation budget. We'll double check and make sure. I believe that's part of the capital budget for transportation.
Yeah, my general question is just a bigger scope, that we have the capital. We're going to have issue debt to cover this and some other stuff, but this is a program, but these costs are then distributed depending upon what it is throughout the budget. So if I see significant spikes in certain areas related to Connect Up, I'm assuming a lot of that is related to Connect Up, right? Wrong?
Well,
I'm not being clear. Okay, so Connect Up, we've got fleet. I mean, you really beginning to roll on it in 22, 23 and into 24. And my question is in terms of hitting the budget, the impact.
Yeah,
fleet, labor, et cetera, et cetera. It's hard for me to piece that together.
Yep, I get your question. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, let me... I'm going to bore everybody with a little bit of accounting wonkiness here. Transportation is probably going to own those costs on their side. And then the AMI project would typically pay a rate for the usage, and that would get capitalized.
Oh, okay.
So it'll more than likely, and we've been playing around with how we're going to deal with the accounting treatment on some of these things and making sure the calculations make sense. So, we may need a little patience here internally as we've kind of worked through what the perfect answer is. But generally speaking, it would start in transportation and get charged out to the other place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And then from a labor perspective.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the whole project. And so that I don't read something into here when I see increases in certain areas. I'm assuming that a lot of that is ConnectA.
Yes. It being a big capital project, the labor would be reflected in our capital labor and then get allocated to those projects. Yeah. And that's why you actually see an increase in capital labor for 23, 24, a little bit 22. Okay. Same thing with materials as they get allocated to that project. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I guess one more quick thing, Commissioner. Sometimes it'll depend on the thing, right? I mean, a piece of equipment would go, could go straight to a capital project. Administrative overheads may start on one place and get allocated over. Transportation may start because it's a fleet, start in one place and get. So there's not a perfect answer for all costs. It sometimes will depend on what the charge is. But in this particular case on transportation, you know, that's kind of the way we're looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Start in the home base and charge out.
And that's all for you guys to figure out. I just don't want to look at a budget and get alarmed at something, because I'm assuming that ConnectA is driving a lot of this. The board's approved the project, you're running with it now. And Tony just doesn't want to get all in a tizzy over something that is something that the board has already approved. And now you're beginning to execute it. So that's all.
Yeah, it's a great point, Commissioner. And we have to work fairly hard. I'll give Sarah and her folks, the folks that she works with, a lot of credit, but we do have to work very hard to make sure we're not double counting on these things, because we want to show you at a top line what a budget looks like. And there's a lot of movements in these things behind the scenes just because of the accounting treatment policies. So, you know, obviously it takes a bit of effort to make sure we get that sorted out. So we're showing you a good picture.
But Scott, is it true then that looking at this slide, that $34.5 million is the net increase in capital overall for the program, no matter which parts of the budget it ends up getting spent out of?
Correct. And Sarah can jump in here too, but the idea here would be that this includes some of those other things that would be pulled from another area and allocated here. This is what we would view as the loaded budget piece. And let me just go ahead and make one thing clear here. I don't want to get us too deep into the philosophical discussions about evaluating capital projects and, you know, cost benefit and all that stuff. But what you will see from the project management side, they will focus on the direct costs that they're in control of. And that's kind of what we want them to focus on, right? That we want them to focus on the things that are in their control. When it comes to booking it for purposes of accounting and financial reporting, those numbers might be a little bit different because of some allocations that have nothing to do with what they're in control of. And so if you see down the road a number in the financial statements that looks like one thing and the project team is giving you a different number, just remember they're giving you the number that they're focused on, that's in their control, that they're managing.
Okay, on the same, I'm going to get off this topic, but am I seeing any, again, the temporary folks that are going to be doing the hookups? Is that in labor costs, beginning in labor costs in 2022, or is that going to show up in 23 and 24?
So Sarah can correct me if I get this wrong. We have some capital costs in the AMI project captured just in case those folks start coming in late this year, but we're not really reflecting them in the FTE numbers because we really don't think the ramp up on the hiring is going to happen until right at the end of the year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sarah, did I capture that correctly?
You did, absolutely.
Okay.
I have a question, please. Scott, you said you don't want to be double counting or double reporting certain kinds of expenditures, right? If I understood that comment, is that right? Okay, understand and appreciate that. But if there are labor, I just want to understand this. So if there are labor costs or transportation costs or any other costs that will be incurred because of the Connect program, they're not going to be pulled out of the budget for Connect Up and shown somewhere else, are they?
I can answer that actually. It's actually the opposite. So if we know that there's going to be business, so this 34.4 million includes the internal labor of the people from the business that they expect to work on the project. So what we've actually done is backed it out of their departments so that we're not double counting it there. So this number does include that.
Okay, good. Good job.
Yeah, and that's actually pretty normal for all the capital stuff, right? I mean, when Sarah is budgeting, you know, we look at labor, and then labor shuffles down into O&M projects and shuffles down into capital projects, and to the extent it's pulled over into capital, we have an offset there. So, you know, that was part of the challenge with the pandemic is because we had to shut down a lot of the capital projects, the capital stuff came down, that labor came back over into the sort of normal bucket, and that created a little strange variance for us.
All right, I'll move on unless there's any other comments on this.
Good.
Good discussion. Last but not least, and I know you've been briefed on this as well, we've got funding in the budget to continue construction on the North County Community Office. So it's about $14 million in 2022, also planning on utilizing bond funds for this project. So the facilities department's provided us some really neat pictures, some of the what it might look like when it's done, the site work that is currently close to being completed, and then also the overall site plan.
I just noticed your last name is Bond. I never had noticed that
before. Every time I hear Bonds, I always perk up. That is what we have for the electric system today. We are coming back in November 16th meeting. We're going to be going into more depth on our five-year forecast, just as a heads up. But if there aren't any other questions on electric, I will move on to water.
Sarah, let me make one other quick comment before we leave electric. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in 2 weeks when we come back on the five-year forecast. We do have a placeholder in the 2022 budget for a bond placement. And as you recall, last year we put in three tranches over 3 years as a placeholder. We ended up front loading some of it in 2021 when we did the placement because the market was very, very advantageous and we really wanted to pounce on the extremely low rates. We're kind of doing the same approach for 2022. We've got it as a placeholder, but there's a lot of factors there. What's our reserve levels? What does the market look like? What's our real need as we get into the year? So just remember, we're giving ourselves a little flexibility there as we get into 2022, and that might be a bond placement that we don't need. So we want to give ourselves kind of the space to make that decision as we get into next year.
Well, just curious, would you expect the bond market not to be as favorable in 2022?
Well, if I knew the answer to that question.
Let's go on.
I think Jim Herling is on the call if he wants to jump in and pontificate a little bit about.
I don't want to take us off point.
I'll say this, and if Jim's on and if he wants to disagree, he can. I'm not sure that we see any near-term big pressures that would move us off of, you know, kind of the low interest rate environment we have right now. That's just my two cents. Long term, I think it's a pretty complicated mess just with inflationary pressures and stuff going on in DC. But I think near term, I'm not sure we see any real good reason to think that the bond market won't still be favorable.
Jim, I see you have your hand up. Do you have anything to add?
No, commissioners, this is Jim Herling, the senior manager of Treasury Risk Management and Supply Chain. No, I think Scott nailed it. I think overall, you know, we expect the rates to remain, you know, low compared to historical standards. Although there is some volatility in the market right now because of the inflation pressures and supply chain issues. And back to Scott's initial point of, you know, if we knew where interest rates were going to be in 6 months, you know, we wouldn't be doing what we do for a living. So it's, yeah, you never know. But really, I think even though you're seeing some short-term volatility, the interest rates tend to still be very favorable compared to long-term averages.
All right, I'm gonna move on to the water system now. Before I start, I mean, you've had a chance to hear from Brant quite a bit this year, recently talking about the water system. So a lot of this might be stuff you've already heard. So I'll go ahead and go through it relatively quickly, and please let me know if there's any further questions that we can help with. First, I'd like to talk about kind of the two biggest things that influence our water system budget. One is our growth. Water system primarily is in Lake Stevens area, which has continued to grow. So you can see that they're expecting continued growth, about 2% a year. You know, that growth means we need to, you know, purchase more water, and we need to maintain more assets. And then also, which I know you've heard about, the cost of water. So about 25% of our operating expenditures are purchased water that we purchase from the city of Everett. And we are expecting a 1.4% increase from them. And we're also expecting a growth in demand. So we will have a little bit of pressure on our purchased water charges, which we'll look at in just a second. So taking a look, similar to what we looked at the electric system, water is also very heavily dependent on retail sales from residential customers. They also have a very small water wholesale sales, and then they have a little bit of other operating revenues as well. You can see we're up just slightly from 2022. And as you know, there is currently a 2.75% rate increase. It's a placeholder right now in the 2022 budget. Our wholesale customers are primarily Granite Falls, Arlington, Snohomish, and Gold Bar, who all purchase water from us. And we are expecting a little bit higher revenues from that just due to higher sales to them. And then we have some other operating revenues that the water department has, which is primarily property rentals and other miscellaneous items. Looking at the expenditure side of water, you can see they're about 50% of their costs are O&M, which is about $7.3 million. Purchased water, which we talked about a little bit earlier, we're going to go into a little bit more detail about those costs. That does reflect a 2% customer growth, a little bit of demand growth. And it also is dependent on how much water we produce ourselves from our Lake Stevens well and how much we purchase from the city of Everett. So I'll talk about that in just a few minutes. You can see their O&M is up just a little bit from 2020. There's a few things that are reflected there, including the cost of electric system have gone up. They pay for some of their share of admin time and information technology systems. So I mentioned earlier, so what this slide talks about is of the water that we give to our customers, how much of it comes from Everett and how much of it comes from well water. And you can see it is primarily coming from the city of Everett, though we do have a bit of production on our own from our own wells. There is a planned shutdown of our treatment plant about 3 months next year that is in these numbers.
I have a question about the 58% capacity in two slides. The last slide. So what does that mean for us? What's ideal?
I'm going to defer to Brant on this one.
Is that, good, bad, or just kind of typical, or what?
What slide are you
on? So just to kind of give an overview, this is Brant Wood, AGM of the Water Utility. So our Lake Stevens wells, we have water rights that that have maxed out. You know, that would be 100% of the capacity, but we have maintenance that has to happen. We have issues that happen with the wells. So we're normally on 75% capacity. We're saying that we're estimating about 58% capacity this year, just because of additional maintenance that we're going to be doing and a capital project that we're going to be doing to the actual plant this year. So just an estimated amount of how much of the capacity of the overall wells of 100%. 100% would be roughly 1,400 acre feet that year. We're saying that we're going to do, less than that. And typically we hit around 75% typically in a good year. Just okay.
Thank you.
Run it when we need it.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brant. So next slide talks a little bit about some of our capital improvements. So we've broken it up into two sections. One are the capital improvements that are focused specifically on Warm Beach. So we've included a map that kind of shows some of the larger projects. They're going to be doing some improvements to the water treatment plant out there, about $1.4 million, and then some major main replacements that are going to be happening in that area. So those sort of projects at Warm Beach are going to be continuing, as well as maintenance of the existing systems, the other systems in the service territory. A few of them that we've highlighted here. Again, they're also going to be beginning their portion of the water AMI conversion, their Connect Up project, about $2.8 million next year. And then the regular main replacement program. So they're continuing to replace the old mains as they go. And then they also have another project, Lake Stevens Treatment Plant Corrosion Control Optimization, which is about $500,000. So those are just a few of the capital projects in the water system next year. And that's actually all I have on water. So before I move on, I'll see if there's any questions. Okay. Well, so as we mentioned, so at the November 16th meeting, if we happen to have any suggested modifications to the budget, we'll be sharing those with you. And then we'll also go into the electric system and the water system five-year forecast and reserve projections. And we will be asking for budget approval on December 7th.
Questions for Sarah, commissioners?
No, it's really impressive what you folks have put together. Thank you.
I'll just say go ahead, Commissioner Olson.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it'll be really important to me to really understand the reserve projections, especially in light of a rate increase, to understand where we're projecting those over the next 5 years relative to our board policy.
Yeah, and let me go ahead and give you a preview to be thinking about over the next couple of weeks. But when we come back on the 16th, we're going to be talking about that five-year forecast. And you're going to see what we would characterize as a pretty conservative posture over the next few years for the district. And one of the things that we'll talk more about then is that we do think there's a fair amount of uncertainty still that's very difficult to predict between generation, between supply chain, between, labor risks, and pipelines. And so we'll talk more about those things. You can be thinking about that over the next couple of weeks, but we're going to come back to you with a fairly conservative look over the next few years. But we're also going to talk a little bit about what we think those risk issues are that we are not having a perfect, we don't have a perfect response to yet, until some time passes.
Well, Scott, this commissioner also, thank you for saying that before I went off on a whole nother list of questions. I'll wait for 2 weeks because that was what I was thinking too. Probably a lot more unknowns. And I thought to myself that perhaps this budget was not easy to put together this time.
Yeah, it's and a lot of compliment to Sarah and Andrea, and then a lot of other people at the district, of course. We always say that, but I want to repeat it over and over again. Yeah. We've got a lot of people that put their hands in this, but you're right, and we'll get a better sense of that in a couple of weeks too when we start looking at those out years. We're trying to strike a really fine balance here of being good stewards of ratepayers' money. And then working hard on cost management and rate strategies and bond strategies, but admitting to ourselves that we do have some interesting things going on in our world right now that are creating some question marks that are difficult to predict. Just supply chain alone, just in the in the last month, has really turned us upside down. So. You know, those things are weighing heavily on our minds. Well, but I appreciate the comment. And Sarah, thank you for the presentation. It was really great. And obviously, we'll be happy to answer any questions today or going forward.
Sarah, we have a question here from a ratepayer. Mr. Keeler, go ahead. And Mr. Keeler, you can unmute yourself.
How's that, Commissioner?
Perfect.
Name is Stephen Keeler. I'm a resident of Edmonds. I think I had my hand up sooner. I have two questions over time in the presentation of the budget. The first one has to do, I think, with information on slide 14. And the question, I guess, is this. Is the money the PUD pays to solar rooftop residential sites, is that an expense? Anybody?
Is that the budget reason?
Yeah.
Did I not get heard?
I think he's looking, Scott, on slide 14, and Sarah, on the generation portfolio.
Yeah, we don't have any solar included in the generation system. That all runs through electric, but I'm not 100% sure I'm understanding the question.
And I can understand why you might not understand my question. A solar rooftop site, residential, generates electricity. I think the PUD buys that. If that's an expense to the PUD, where does it show up in the budget?
Commissioners, this is Brian Booth, Senior Manager of Rates, Economics, and Energy Risk Management. I can answer this one. Residential customers with rooftop solar are treated through our net metering program, which shows up in the budget as a reduction in revenue. So we see less rate revenue from them because they're generating their own solar, but we don't write them checks.
Yeah, Brian, I would assume, right, this for us, it would be what the utility world would refer to as behind the meter. We're having to make an assessment of how much might be out there in our footprint, and then it's just goes as an offset to the inflow.
I guess I could rephrase my question this way. If the rooftop solar site on a residential customer's home is generating electricity that's coming back into the grid, how is it being accounted for as a revenue? Isn't it being sold by the utility to somebody else?
So this is a little bit more complicated a question. So through the net metering program, we bank their electricity for them. So if electricity flows back to us, let's just call it 10 kilowatt hours, then they can essentially draw on that same 10 kilowatt hours from the PUD at a future date. And you're right that in real time, if it flows back to us, it has some effect on our wholesale portfolio and impacts our market operations. But that is far too in the weeds for budget consideration.
Sure. And I can understand why it would be far too in the weeds. But I'm wondering if the general population of the cities in the district understand how minuscule then solar rooftop really is. I'll let somebody ponder that. Let me ask my next question if I can.
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know if the PUD has a philosophy on the conversion of overhead circuits to underground, but if they do, and if they're doing that work, where would that show up? How would that show up in the budget? Work to take an overhead circuit and put it underground?
How does that work?
I can take a stab at this, Scott, and Sarah. Typically, we will only convert overhead to underground at a municipality's request, and they pay the difference. So if we have to move a line that is overhead because it's in easement or right of way, and they want to put that underground, they have to pay for the expense of that underground.
So as a customer, if I wanted the city of Edmonds to get my woodway circuit all underground, I'd have to go to the city first.
Yeah, the city would have to pay the difference or yeah, yes.
That answers my question. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you very much. Thank you for the budget presentation.
You're welcome. That would be slide number 26, Mr. Keeler.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, are there any other comments from the public regarding the proposed budget? If so, please raise your hand. All right, I'm not seeing any hands up. Commissioners, I assume you have no more questions?
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you very much. And thank you, Scott, for jumping in. And I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the proposed 2022 budget.
just a minute. I move the public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget to be continued to Tuesday, November 16th, 2021 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett, or at a publicly noticed video conference, if appropriate.
Okay, I will call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Next, item six, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a motion accepting the third quarter 2021 financial conditions and activities monitoring report. And I will call for a motion.
I move acceptance.
Okay, we have Julia Anderson here to provide us with the presentation. Good afternoon, Julia.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be here again. So I'm here to present the financial and budget results for the third quarter for 2021. Waiting for control to kick over here. There we go. So a couple of things that I'd like to point out just before we get started, a little bit of a reminder that this first section that I'll be talking about before we get into the water piece is related to the generation and electric system. And hang on one second, my camera just kicked off.
Uh-oh.
And I'm trying to. Trying to get that back on. Sorry about that.
We can hear you.
Okay. You I think I'm back now.
You are.
So again, this is the electric and generation systems combined. So it's a little bit different number wise than what you might be seeing later in your packet for the budget forecast and major project status. So I just want to point that out so that there isn't confusion on that later. And then also the real piece of this section that we want to focus on is this column right here. Hopefully you can see my mouse. That column is the results of the through the third quarter of 2021, our actuals. And we compare those to last year and the budget as well. So moving on with that, our net income for this point in the year, we are about $3 million lower than we were in 2020, but about $14 million less than budgeted as well. And we'll get into some of the details behind these numbers to further explain them. Our total operating revenues are about $17 million greater than same time frame last year. And we are about $13 million higher than anticipated from budget. And then moving on, our total operating expenses, again, we're about $14 million higher than same period in 2020. And we are exceeding budget by about $26 million.
Yeah.
So, did I hear a question?
What's in that?
We're going to get into those numbers as we go through. Okay. I'll explain all of those.
Okay.
Okay. So taking a look at our revenues, our retail sales are about $17 million more than when compared to 2020. A lot of this is related to increases in our retail sales of our residential customers, and our commercial and industrial loads are starting to come back up from what they were in the third quarter of 2020. We're moving a little bit more to pre-COVID numbers and seeing some returns and higher numbers for commercial and industrial loads, which is helping retail sales. Our wholesale revenues they've increased about $3 million for the same time period, and we're about $5 million more than budgeted. Part of this is related to volumes that we've sold in the wholesale market. The amount of power available for sale has decreased, but the prices have increased. And we've got some slides a little bit further in that get a little bit more into that number as well. And then our other operating revenues were down slightly from same period last year. Most of that is related to a program that we have with BPA. It's a two-year program with BPA, and we have a tendency to see more of those reimbursements coming in the first year of the BPA cycle as opposed to the second year. So it's a fluctuation that we see on a pretty regular basis. So digging in a little bit deeper, this graph shows our megawatt hours billed. 2020 is in orange and 2021 is in the blue. And you can see that our residential sales are running pretty significantly similar to last year as our commercial. The biggest change that you can see is down here under the wholesale. Last year, we had quite a bit more sold in the wholesale market at a lower price as opposed to this year. Fewer sales, but higher dollar prices. And so while that can be really good for the revenue side of it, it can also have the opposite impact for purchase power when we get into that section. So moving into our O&M expenses, operations and maintenance, you can see that our operations and maintenance expenses are about $4 million higher in 2021 as opposed to 2020. A portion of that is due to a storm that we had earlier in the year. And then we are running a little bit higher than budgeted. And part of that is storm and some O&M costs related to customer support programs, as well as changes in supply chain. Moving into purchase power, we're about $9 million higher this year than we were in the previous year, and about $14 million higher than budgeted. Moving on to the next slide to explain that a little bit further, you can see this is our megawatt hours for power supply, and under the BPA slice, comparing the orange for 2020 to the blue of 2021, you can see that our slice is down significantly from prior years. And then this is where you can also see out in the market purchases, we've purchased more at the market at a higher price than comparison to last year. So some of that is related to different favorable water conditions one year as opposed to the next. Taking a look at some of our other expenses, interest income is down a little bit as compared to prior year. Again, some of that is accounting change requirements that we book. As Scott would say, it's that accounting stuff that we have to do behind the scenes, and it does have an impact on the financial statements. But the bigger factor on this slide to point out is our capital expenditures. We are running almost right on budget where we would expect to be. We are a little bit higher for actual expenditures this year as compared to last year. However, with more capital construction going on in 2021 as compared to 2020, a lot of that being COVID driven, but none of those numbers are anything that we would be surprised to see. And again, this is just kind of a review of the financial statement actuals compared to last year and budget. Again, the biggest variance would be the total operating expenses, of which is the purchase power costs and some of the increases in O&M for storm expenditures and continued community support for our customers that are struggling. So moving on to our financial condition indicators, there isn't a lot of change on this slide as compared to the last time that I was here presenting this information. I think it was back in August. The district continues to have some very strong financial indicators for both the electric and the generation system. And our bond ratings are strong, and our outstanding debt continues to it's higher than it was same period last year, but we've done a bond sale. So again, none of these numbers have changed significantly, and they're not surprising. There's no outliers to be pointed out. And the same can be said about our electric system operating indicators. So the district for the electric and generation system is still performing very well, and we've got a lot of really strong indicators. Moving on to the water system. The net income for the water system is about $1.7 million higher in 2021 as compared to previous year. So that's good results for net income. Total operating revenues, about $768,000 higher than the previous year, and about $1.5 million more than budgeted, most of that being in retail sales. Their total operating expenditures, are a little bit higher than previous years and running slightly higher than budget. None of the numbers are, again, a significant variance of what we would expect to see. And when we look at actual expenditures this year as compared to last year, 2020, we did have some lower expenditures for meter reading costs when we had responded to COVID expenditure, COVID response, as well as less O&M and capital going on in the water system last year as compared to this year. And the real driver going on in the water system this year, you can see, is their increase in capital expenditures. They've been doing a lot of work at the Warm Beach water system and continuing with those improvements. So they're about $4.9 million higher than last year, as well as a little bit higher than budgeted.
Higher than budgeted, or does that look like it's $1.9 million less than budgeted?
Excuse me, you're correct. I said it the wrong way.
Okay. I was trying to understand how the net income could be so high. Now I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, lots of numbers on this page. And then again, the water system is continuing to perform very strongly for their financial conditions. And again, there's no outliers on here, nothing really significant to report as a change from the prior report for either these financial condition indicators or the operating indicators. And I believe that's the last slide, yes.
All right, do we have any comments from the public regarding the monitoring report? If so, please raise your hand. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands up. Commissioners, do you have any more questions or comments?
Nope. No.
All right, I will call for a vote. All those in favor say aye, all those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.
Next, we have 6B, consideration of a resolution approving a proposal to change the boundaries of commissioner districts of Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, we have Ann Spangler available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? If so, please raise your hand. Mr. Keeler has his hand up. Go ahead, Mr. Keeler.
I've unmuted my microphone. I'm assuming everybody can hear me.
We can.
I studied the photos that were provided by the PUD, and I just want to make sure I understand what's going on. It looks to me like the proposed change is minuscule and just affects one small, very small area that was indicated by a dashed red line. So, for lack of better words, I'm assuming this isn't a huge change. Would I be wrong or right?
I think you'd be correct. It's not a huge change. It's just balancing the population of the three areas.
Which is a good idea. Thank you, commissioners.
You're welcome. Any other questions or comments from the public? Okay, any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
No.
Oh. Okay. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item C, consideration of a motion for indemnity and defense of an employee. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval of the request of district employee Corey Kiefer for the district to provide a defense and indemnity in the matter of Logan Boswell versus Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County and Corey Kiefer on the terms set forth in the confidential memorandum from the Assistant General Counsel to CEO, General Manager, and the Commission dated October 20th, 2021.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments, commissioners?
No.
Okay, all those in favor say aye, all those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Next is item D, consideration of a motion for indemnity and defense of an employee. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval of the request by former district employee Boone Mill for the district to provide a defense and indemnity in the matter of Funston versus Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County and Boone Mill on the terms set forth in the confidential memorandum from the General Counsel to the General Manager dated October 26, 2021.
Any questions, commissioners?
No. No.
Okay, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 7, our CEO General Manager Report. Do you have a report for us today, John?
I do have a couple of good things to share with the board. First off, out of our ITS group, they have designed and implemented a safety-based enhancement in support of 911 calls coming into our energy control center. The enhancements allow improved capabilities for prioritization and visualization of these calls. This was a cross-functional collaboration, including D&E, customer service, and our ITS group. The new features include visual cues, both color and text, to indicate the 911 call so that servicemen can prioritize this work accordingly. A special icon with the ability to filter the calls displays the location of the 911 calls on a map and the ability to filter only 911 calls on the map. The enhancement gives the ECC and servicemen a highly effective visual as to where the 911 calls are located, which aids in the situational awareness. In our customer and energy service work, our energy services group, a lot of great work continues to go on. Our community support customer service posted the fifth round of pledges from the county. To date, we have loaded pledges for 661 households receiving almost $560,000 in direct bill assistance to bring their balance current. We are currently in the process of completing the sixth round of payment pledges. We worked with Government Affairs and Mukilteo City Council to establish a process for the council to leverage federal ARPA dollars to benefit struggling Mukilteo utility customers. Should be finalizing the program soon and plan to leverage the design to work with other municipalities looking to apply their federal dollars as well. Roughly 396 residential, and which equates to 170,000, and 14 non-residential, which is almost 23,000, for a total of 192,000 to receive credits. A huge kudos to Brenda White and Jeff Feinberg for their direct work with the city council. Our flex energy pilots are getting ready to begin. We have our first peak event scheduled for November 4th from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Detailed emails and text messages sent to our participating customers day before event, at the time of the event, and at the end of the event. The next event will likely be scheduled for the week of 11/15 based on current weather forecast. Some stats from our customer service from the storm. CSR has contributed to storm restoration effort by responding to over 4,000 customer calls. There were over 11,000 automated website outage notifications generated, and 2,000 were generated by the IVR, the automated phone system. And excited to share that the district outage map received over 300,000 views throughout the storm.
Wow.
And a significant customer service improvement. I'm really proud of the group working on this one. To make bill payment easier for all our customers, we've extended our billing due date from the 15 days to 21 days starting November 4th of this year. The communications plan will include an online message presenting to our customers who log in with My Snowpud profiles. A change from the 15 calendar days to 21 calendar due dates has been something the CSRs have been advocating for years because, one, it provides customers more time in general, which is a positive, particularly in times or during the pandemic. The 15 days was considerably shorter than many other utility bill due dates and has been a customer frustration point for years. If we have a prolonged mail cycle, such as a holiday, it can result in a customer receiving a bill only to have it due a few days after they receive it. It limits our flexibility for CSRs to make payment arrangements, and the 21 calendar days is just simpler to explain and track for customers. In our D&E group at our Payne Field substation, they completed the installation of a new substation transformer, 28 MVA transformer, and a transmission circuit switcher. And they also completed a system reliability project that included auto sectionalizing at our Village substation. And I just want to reiterate again the fantastic work done by the team to set up or to stand up the new website. Oh, and I don't know if you've had a chance to go yes. take a look. It really is.
On my break.
Oh, right on. I just want to give special kudos to some of the team. And this doesn't, and I apologize up front, it doesn't cover everybody because I know there's a lot of fingerprints all over this. But Diana Kwong, Wendy Paris, Cindy Daly, Jeremy Babcock, Krista Rasmussen, who does all the great pictures and videos on the website. They're just all absolute rock stars. And I also want to point out the three smiling, welcoming faces on the homepage are Ryan Newby, Lisa Whitley, and Amanda Bennett. And then last, we did get the CIO profile posted on our recruiter's website, Mycoff website. And so that's out and it'll be posted up through December 3rd. And then we will begin the process of going through the resumes and in search of a new CIO. And that's it.
Any questions for John on his report?
No, thank you.
All right, John, looks like no questions. You said you had things good news. Do you have any bad news that you need to extend the report for bad news?
No, I mean, there's so many good things that overwhelm the, you know, yeah, it's just, we've got great folks doing great things. We're in a good place.
That 911 thing sounds really, it really yeah. makes a lot of sense. That's wonderful that agency works with us to make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, what I think is so cool is the engagement from our folks really in the spirit of continuous improvement and the ability to leverage the experience, the issues that, you know, our frontline folks are seeing, not just in the field, but throughout the organization. And even the billing date or due date is another great example. Feedback that our CSRs are getting, they engage and we address those problems on behalf of our customers. So again, just really cool to be see so many folks engaged in making things better for our customers and our communities.
Yeah, I will say that utilities, I have three utilities I pay, and those are always the challenging ones because they don't come at the times of the month that all the other bills come. Yeah. So I appreciate that. And of course, that'll be a benefit of Connect Up is that we'll be able to move those dates too. So
yep,
that's wonderful.
And John, did you say 30,000 or 300,000 hits on the outage map?
300,000.
Oh, that's what I meant to say. Okay, 300. That's a lot.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a certain percentage of those are the folks that were out, you know, the extended period of time that just kind of keep refreshing and looking at. And there's probably also a few of them that are me because I keep, you know, wanting to track progress. So I'm not sure how many of that 300,000 I am, but I'm sure I'm a few.
Well, I was just going to say, looky-loos. I go on it, too, and see who's out.
Yeah,
I actually reported an outage for the first time on it this last storm. I've always looked at it, but I've never reported. It was very easy to do.
That's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah, when we had an outage here in South Edmonds, it was really great to just go right there, you know, on our battery-operated laptops, you know, and check it out and keep checking to see when is it coming back. And it was quite efficient, I'll say.
Yeah. And you know, another cool thing about that, I think, is again, that outage map was internally developed. Another demonstration of our phenomenal IT folks that
really
and they continue to enhance it.
It's a really important part of our customer satisfaction, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, next is item 8, commission business. We have 8A, commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
I have no new business. No. Just Solar Summit, and we had our IRP workshop, but nothing out of the ordinary.
I went to the Public Power Forum in Kennewick last week, and interesting conversation about the new small modular reactors. And so
that was about the highlight of that forum.
I thought so too. What you didn't get to see watching it virtually is there was a simulation. And so you could go in another room and you could actually walk through the plant virtually.
Oh.
And what a clever way. So they were having the staff would be maintaining it, go through the plant design, and then they were tweaking the design based on, you know, how things would work best for those that maintain it. And I was thinking, how many things that engineers built that that operators have to deal with the rest of their lives trying to operate. And what a great process to design something. So it was like a video game. All right. Next is 8B, our commission events calendar. Are there any changes to the events calendar, commissioners?
Nope. Not that I know of.
Commissioner Olson?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Next is item C, 2021 budget forecast and major project status report, the September results. And Sarah Bond's here to answer any questions we might have. Are there any questions about the report, commissioners?
Nope. Can you give me just a second?
Sure. I have one, sort of a question.
Go ahead with your question then.
An observation while you're looking for yours. And then I was looking at a nautical chart, and we've got the Hat Island thing we've talked about several times. And I noticed that Hat Island's actually closer to Whidbey than it is to us. I'm wondering if there's any potential savings in hooking them up to PSE or something. I also noticed that Kamano Island is about as close.
They don't want them.
Yeah, but Kamano Island is about as close a distance as Tulalip. And it looks like Anne has her hand up.
So.
Go ahead, John.
I was just gonna say, the team has explored routes from Kamano Island. And we did actually briefly talk about, would it make sense to think about Whidbey Island and then taking service from PSE to provide. Okay. But there's actually other issues on those routes other than, it does appear to be a shorter distance or equal distance, but there's other issues beyond just the distance.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
But all those options have been explored.
Okay. Yeah. I figured they had been. Any other questions on the report?
I was so interested in listening to what you. Okay, it's not any big deal. Go ahead.
Okay. Next is item D, consideration of a resolution establishing the regular meeting dates of the commission for the year 2022. I'll call for a motion.
Move approval.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding our resolution? This is the resolution that sets our meeting dates for next year. So please raise your hand. Not seeing any. Are there any questions or comments, commissioners, from you?
No, I have none. I like them.
Okay. Well, thank you to the clerk staff for putting that together and putting all the other events that may or may not happen, depending on the pandemic, in line, so we can figure out what our meeting schedule looks like. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. It was really helpful.
Okay, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Next is item 9, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to governance planning calendar?
Nope. I don't think so.
high? On November the 16th, afternoon session. Okay, no, I have no questions, no.
Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board today?
Nope.
Okay. We're hearing none. It is now 3:19. And our meeting is adjourned. Be in good health, everyone.